This is Chef John Foles welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week, we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We'll search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and naturally, we're going to try to cook for you. Milk, so delicious and healthy. And think of all the foods that milk provides. Butter, yogurt, cream, and of course, cream cheese. Folks, make sure you got milk. Join me, Chef John Foles, and Rebecca Turner, Nutrition Manager with the Southeast Dairy Association, as we talk about milk on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. In Iraq, fighters with the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, are moving closer to Baghdad. Security forces and hundreds of volunteers have answered a call by Iraq's top Shiite cleric to help battle the insurgency. And neighboring Iran says it's considering cooperating with the U.S. on bringing security to Iraq. But as NPR's Peter Kenyon reports, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani says only under certain circumstances.
Rouhani told Iranian reporters that Tehran can think about working with Washington on the Iraq situation if the U.S. starts to confront Sunni militants seizing towns and weapons in Iraq. Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps has been active in Iraq since American soldiers withdrew, but the recent military offensive by Sunnis has caught the Iraqi army flat-footed, and Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has called for outside help. Like President Obama, Rouhani is ruling out the sending of Iranian ground troops to Iraq, but Revolutionary Guard advisors have reportedly been visiting Baghdad. Washington says it is not currently in touch with Tehran about the situation in Iraq. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
Meanwhile, as President Obama considers his military options on the situation in Iraq, a U.S. aircraft carrier is moving into the Persian Gulf. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says the USS George H.W. Bush will move from the Arabian Sea, accompanied by a guided missile cruiser and a guided missile destroyer. In Afghanistan, polls are closed in the presidential runoff elections. Shukriya Bereksi is a member of the Afghan parliament. She says the purple ink she sports on her finger, a sign she voted, is an important sign for the future of women in her country.
I'm proud. The color means a lot for me, and that card means lots for Afghanistan. This is democracy. I hope that we will have the most reformist president after today's election.
But violence marred some voting areas. The country's interior minister says at least 40 people were killed in attacks around the country, although overall voting was peaceful. Hundreds of demonstrators marched across the Brooklyn Bridge today calling for tougher gun control laws. Mark Garber from member station WNYC has more.
About 1,000 activists gathered in downtown Brooklyn before marching across the bridge to City Hall in Lower Manhattan. Protesters held a demonstration outside the building's gates and chanted, "Not one more." That's the rallying cry uttered by Richard Martinez, whose son Christopher was shot to death in Santa Barbara, California last month. The marchers included relatives of some of those slain in the 2012 shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. The protest was underwritten by former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, one of the nation's most visible gun control advocates. For NPR News, I'm Mark Garber in New York.
The legal status of more than 500 same-sex couples who legally wed in Wisconsin this week is in question. Last week, a U.S. district judge struck down the state's ban on gay marriage, but on Friday, she put the ruling on hold, meaning no more same-sex marriages, while an appeal winds its way through the courts. This is NPR. It's difficult to get around Philadelphia today. A commuter rail transit strike is underway, affecting tens of thousands of people who use the city's 13 trains that connect the city and suburbs, the airport, and also New Jersey. And now the state's governor, Tom Corbett, has asked the White House for help. He wants President Obama to appoint an emergency board to mediate. Union workers at the transit system, called SEPTA, walked out of a meeting with management yesterday after failing to reach a contract agreement. It's day three of the World Cup in Brazil. As NPR's Russell Lewis reports, a busy slate of games has fans in the country having a blast.
No matter the teams playing, it's clear Brazil has World Cup fever. During the Colombia-Greece game Saturday, a group of Mexican fans spontaneously began to sing at a restaurant in Natal. Natal is on Brazil's northeast coast, and it's where the U.S. plays its first game Monday night against Ghana. Ghana is the team that eliminated the U.S. from the past two World Cups. Fans from both countries are beginning to stream into the area, arriving by plane, bus, and car. But the weather conditions are terrible. It's been raining here for days, and it's not expected to let up anytime soon, meaning Monday's game will likely be very sloppy. Russell Lewis, NPR News, Natal.
A top football coach who led the Pittsburgh Steelers to four Super Bowl titles has died. Chuck Knoll started as head coach to the Steelers in 1969, and under his guidance, they steadily improved, getting their first Super Bowl victory in 1975. He retired from coaching in 1991 and was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1993. He was 82. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, welcome everybody to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and we thank you so much for joining us at the kitchen table today. It's so nice to have you here on my brother's birthday, Michelle.
Is that right? Which one? You got to be more specific.
Well, I mean, I have five of them, including
exactly.
Myself is number six, but Baboy Roy Lee Jr., better referred to as Baboy.
You know,
Baboy, you know, you brought me some blackberries the other day, remember?
I remember you telling me about the beautiful blackberries that Baboy brought, but once again, I did not put my eyes or taste buds on them.
They were beautiful, I can tell you.
And delicious, I'm sure.
Anyway, happy birthday, my boy, Roy Lee Jr., named after my dad. Actually, the first Roy Lee Jr. passed away in 1942 as a young newborn.
Aww.
And then mom and dad had my sister Ruth, and then a second boy and named him Roy Lee Jr.
And then you came along and blessed the world.
I came along number three, and the whole thing changed.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised all of
that emphasis on Roy Lee Jr. all of a sudden became secondary.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of surprised your parents went on and had more. I mean, once they had achieved perfection.
Well, they said there's more of these somewhere. There's more of these. If we could get a few more of these, so they tried eight more. Never quite got it, but that's all right. I'm bringing. Anyway, no, a good happy birthday.
I hope your siblings aren't listening
today. A good happy birthday to Baboy today. Anyway, y'all, it's so nice to have you. And, of course, I'm already welcoming Michelle Yarbrough. Is it warm today or what?
Ooh, yep, we're in summer.
Oh, I tell you what, it is. So I got a big project going on at White Oak again. I tell you, I'm
I know. We were out there yesterday. I think I got a little sunburn there for 5 minutes.
Well, that's because you got me doing this new PBS series. And it's all outside, y'all, in summer. Now, if you're going to do an outside show on television, wouldn't you do it like in February, March, April? Wouldn't you do it in November when the November winds are there to remember?
You wouldn't do it
June, July, and August in Louisiana, and it's outdoors. You wouldn't do it. But you know what, Mama? I'm up to it. You know, I'm up to it because my public's waiting. My public is waiting. So let's just get it done and forget about it.
Go for it.
Hey, Slama, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Y'all got some good sunglasses, I hope.
Yeah, you're good.
I got to get some new ones because it's the fishing show. I need to get new fishing glasses.
Oh, yeah, everything's
fishing. Because they're different.
Everything's fishing this year.
It's fish this year.
Yeah. Hooks, Lies, and Alibis is the name of my boat that I'm fishing in. I didn't get it yet, but I didn't get the boat yet, but Hooks, Lies, and Alibis, that's the name of
it. It's in the pipeline.
But, yeah. Okay, y'all, anyway, that's where we are so far today. So, Michelle, what else, babe?
Well, this is a delicious drink that I have.
A single Slama, not a triple, a slingle.
Just
a single
one.
Yeah, it's a little latte.
A latte.
Mm-hmm. Good milk in it. nice little kick of milk.
Yeah, June's you dairy know, month.
And it's she dairy always, month.
Yeah, June's dairy month, and she celebrates every
I'm
holiday.
I'm celebrating. Huh? I'm celebrating. I'm doing my part.
So she's
I'm
got
promoting
milk,
vitamin she, D. So, I got milk.
So she's got milk right now.
That's it. That's it. And it's the real thing, too. Straight from the cow. No powder, no soy, no milk substitute here. I am authentic.
You're a purist.
I am a purist when it comes to milk. And maybe after the show, you know, if you behave and everything, we'll get you one,
we'll
too.
We'll forget but that, this, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to save that $5.
Well, you just hold that thought because I write you checks. I can pull. I can take my $5 up. Anyway, that's interesting that you brought up milk substitutes. You'll find that they're being used more and more and more today. And I'm not referring to the powdered milk for coffee, like that Cremora, whatever they used to call it in the old days. I don't know what they call it today. But I'm talking about the other types of milk that have become so commonplace as a replacement for that unbelievable gift from God, cow's milk. You know, I'm talking about like the soy milk stuff. I think there's an almond milk out there now, rice milk. There's a milk made from all these things that got names on them. You see, that's another thing, too. It's all about marketing, Slimer. Remember that as you grow up into adulthood.
It's all about marketing.
You remember it's all about marketing. So, Rice Dream is a name.
Oh, yeah.
Almond Breeze.
Goodness gracious.
You know, very enticing, right?
Soy Silk.
Soy Silk. That's another one. Anyway, until around 2000, you know, these were little niches when we turned from 1999 to 2000, health food items that were just becoming a little bit more mainstream. And at one time, it was about soy milk. Everybody knew soy. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you, for the last couple of years, almond milk is the thing that I seem to be seeing everywhere. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah. You know, and I've tried the almond milks, and I've liked them. They're a little extra sweet.
It doesn't crack like in your mouth like what you chew. That's what I don't like about it.
You want crunchy milk. Crunchy almond milk.
Oh, that's right. It's liquid. I'm sorry. Well, you know, I like almonds myself, but go ahead.
Well, but there is a definitive market for them, especially I think their marketing area specifically is for vegans.
Well, I think that's when it all started, when people started to demand more of these niche foods, and I think vegan really probably made it push over.
Right, because it's plant-based, and a lot of people get confused that the soy milks and the almond milks are for lactose intolerant people, but you can actually get lactose intolerant milk, vitamin D milk. So we'll talk about that later in the show. But anyway, back to the almond and the soy. It is smooth, a little bit thicker. I mean, you kind of have to adjust your palate to that, because I certainly did.
So you drank it?
Well, I have
to taste it. Yeah,
to taste it, and you know how it is, taste testing. You got to know what's out there.
Yeah, I've tasted it because people wanted me to use plant based milk and some of my cooking at the food plant, but it just didn't work with me.
No, it's certainly different. It's not the cow's milk that you know. It's not your mother's cow's milk, so to speak.
Imagine dunking Oreo in that.
Oh, impossible!
Ain't gonna happen. Dunking Oreos all the time.
And you need that cow's milk in your coffee.
Well, you know, and also let's talk about from the chef's point of view. There's nowhere to beat a real milk. These substitutes are first of all, I think, too sweet. You mentioned that.
Yeah.
And for cooking savory foods, which we do a lot with milk, and they don't have the same culinary qualities of milk, no doubt about it, even though I'm sure they tout that they do. Milk has that unique ability to kind of infuse itself into the dish, and you know, the essence of that milk is all picked up into the dish. I can pick up the complex flavors that become a part of the dish when milk is in there. In a creamy seafood sauce, for instance, a milk or cream is absolutely imperative. But if you soak either of them overnight in a dish with some delicious smoky fish, guess what's going to happen? The milk is going to take on the fish flavor and become part of the ingredient. So that's another big part of what real milk does. To the chef, milk is not only an ingredient, it's an essential ingredient to create successful, smooth, creamy, what we like to call mouthfeel appropriate dishes. Mm-hmm. Because when I put my spoon into an oyster's Rockefeller soup, I guarantee if I don't have milk or cream in there, there's no way the mouthfeel is going to be right.
Well, it's a building block, right? It's one of the major components.
It's a 2x4 of cooking, yeah.
It's a 2x4.
It's a 2x4 of cooking. Gotcha. Oh, I should say a 6x6 of cooking.
Loud and clear.
not buttermilk. I mean, you eat buttermilk pancakes.
Oh, I used to love buttermilk in the old days. That was the old days. You don't see much buttermilk around the homes today,
do you? No, you don't. And, you know, Demcho and Pepe, when they were here, they would every now and then have some buttermilk.
Well, yeah,
and
when they made butter, they always had a bunch of it.
It just killed them to throw that away. And so they would save it. I'm sure you went home with some buttermilk sometime because they couldn't. They just could not flush it down the drain. And they gave me some one time. And it was actually good. I mean,
because it was fresh buttermilk. And I hadn't had time to ferment. So, I mean, you just had that wonderful little quality. And Demcho and Pepe, when they would, that was our cheesemakers. Mm-hmm. And when they churned the butter in the butter churn, and the butter was extracted from the milk. I mean, that leftover milk, buttermilk, if left overnight, would have that sour note to it. But right when the butter was churned, it just had that unique flavor to it that was just absolutely incredible.
Well, it was delicious, and I sometimes think buttermilk gets a bad rap. I thought that this writing from medievalcookery.com was actually kind of interesting. It was written in Old English, but it said, "The best use of buttermilk is to charitably bestow it on the poor neighbors." You know, it kind of sounds like a backhanded hint, like it wasn't as good.
Well, I think it used to be more popular as a drink back in the day, but I wouldn't think of making a good biscuit without buttermilk. Our biscuits, all the restaurant biscuits, everything is made with buttermilk, of course. And you know, buttermilk is used as a type of tenderizer for meats as well. We soak a lot of, especially game meat or duck breast or goose breast, in buttermilk.
Well, does it have acid in it?
Well, it's fermented, and it contains acid naturally. It's lactic acid, so it starts to ferment. You get that little sour note to it, which is why it tastes sour or tart when you go to drink it. Similar to yogurts. I mean, yogurt has that same sour flavor to it, but everybody loves yogurt, what's the big deal, right? The mild acid activates the enzymes in meat. That's what it's all about. It gently breaks down the protein the same way that acids like to break down gluten, let's say, in baked goods, making them more moist, so to speak. Good Louisiana cooks know that you get crispy on the outside, moist on the inside of that good southern fried chicken when you soak it in buttermilk.
It sounds like Little Dizzy's is in our future.
Austin Leslie used to
Godfather of fried chicken.
Yeah.
Miss him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But back to the fermented milk products. You mentioned yogurt. I am a big fan of yogurt, and the more tart, the better, actually. And this is a product of the fermentation of whole or skim milk that's inoculated with a starter culture that ferments the lactose, making it curdle.
That's right.
You know, and I've been wanting to make my own yogurt or do my own cheese. You know, you've kind of inspired that over these many years, but hadn't done that yet.
Well, I was at your house the other day for that meeting, and I opened that refrigerator. I saw a lot of yogurt and fermented products all over the thing.
No.
I said, "Oh Lord, no! This is the science of refrigerator."
It was. That was going to be a surprise. What are you doing in my refrigerator?
Well, don't you worry about that. Anyway, y'all, different bacteria as a cheesemaker here are used to create the cultures that give different results to an old-time favorite that seems to have gone the way of drinking buttermilk. It's like cottage cheese. I hated cottage cheese until I made it myself.
Love it now.
And you know how delicious cottage cheese is with fresh fruit. Again,
red grapes.
The key ingredient in cottage cheese is rennet, and of course that's that enzyme from the stomach of unweaned calves. Rennet is necessary to coagulate milk, and that's really what creates curds. Anyway, y'all, we have a lot to talk about today. We have a great guest because we are celebrating milk. June is Dairy Month, and we need to pay homage to our dairy farmers. We definitely need to remember the hard work that these families are doing. We want to talk a little bit more about that. We have a great guest. I have a great recipe. So, y'all, we're going to be back in just a second. Don't go anywhere.
I can tell my milk cow. I can tell by the way she lows. If you see my milk cow, please.
KRVS underwriting announcements reach listeners with your message of support and information about your business or event. To find out more about partnering with South Louisiana's Regional Public Radio Program Source, call us at 482-5787. 482-KRVS.
Our music on the Thistle and Shamrock transcends boundaries, expands horizons, celebrates tradition, stimulates innovation. It's music to bring people together, so why don't you join us?
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
You don't need a stamp to enter the world of jazz. I'm DeJama Gagne, the host of Passport to Modern Jazz. Tuesdays at 10 p.m., I'm going to walk you through the gate into the world of current jazz, back to New Orleans jazz earliest recordings, and won't leave out the Hammond B3.
Tell you what, Michelle, when I hear songs like that, it reminds me of that old sock hop at St. James High School.
I knew that's
took
where
your
we
shoes
were going.
Let me get a sip of my latte. No air conditioning in those days, Slama. Yeah, in the old St. James gym, you just took your shoes off and you slid on that cornmeal. And your forehead, your right forehead would stick to the girl's left forehead because it's kind of hot in there, you know what I mean? And let me tell you what, the lineup of the girls waiting to dance with me, because I had a certain step about me, you see what I mean?
I can just about imagine.
Michelle, I had a certain step about me that the girls liked.
And they didn't mind being stepped on.
And they didn't mind having that just kind of touching the forest to get kind of stuck right there, right? You know what I'm talking about as we dance to that song right now.
Mm-hmm.
What you looking at?
I'm just picturing, first of all, the cornmeal on the floor. I don't get.
Michelle, you had to slide.
Running around in your socks.
Now, Michelle, please, these were what we call the good old days. Huh? The good old days. Anyway, y'all, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And June is a dairy month. I always say, I have my favorite foods and my favorite months of the year, and the calendar is built around food. It's either hunting season, it's duck season, it's deer season,
it's
strawberry
season,
tomato season. We are in one of my favorite seasons. We're in milk season right now. We're in the month of June. Milk season is 12 months a year. Anyway, we have a great guest with us today.
Yeah.
You know, I love this group. Let me just say, I love this group. I know a lot of people involved in the group that our guest is on. When I saw that she was going to be on today, I said, this is my family. Mm-hmm. This is my milk family.
This is your milk family. That's it.
We go way back.
That's true. We do go way back. Over a decade now that we've been working with the Southeast United Dairy Industry Association.
But you're a mere child, Lynn, and I was way before
that. Oh, no, you were not. I forged this relationship. I'll never forget the day Mary Martin tiptoed across the ballroom over the cornmeal and come said hello. But today we have one of her associates with us, Rebecca Turner. She's a nutrition affairs account manager with SUDA. She's earned her bachelor's and master's of science degrees in nutrition and food systems from the University of Southern Mississippi. She's a registered dietitian. She's a certified specialist in sports dietetics. We're going to talk about that. Certified specialist in sports dietetics with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Her role as nutrition affairs program manager for SUDA allows her to conduct television interviews and radio and print interviews on nutrition throughout Mississippi and Louisiana. She also appears on WLBT. She contributes to Wellbeing Magazine, the Clarion Ledger's fitness page, and other publications. In addition, she is the official dietitian for Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Fit to Eat program. Rebecca is here today to share her knowledge of everything milk with us and to help us celebrate June as National Dairy Month. Rebecca, welcome to Stirring It Up.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
That was a great introduction, right, Rebecca?
Well, yeah, and it also reminds me why I stay so sleep deprived.
Morning hosts have nothing on y'all. They really don't, because y'all probably get up with the cows, truly, which is middle of the night.
Sure, we may not be milking them, but we're up with them, forging the way for healthy nutrition information.
Rebecca, you know, you have such a great list of accreditations, credentials following your name and all of
and
it.
And she's a baby.
She's just a child.
She's a child.
What drove you in the direction that you went in life? I mean, you have a pretty, not only impressive resume, but also probably the workload is incredible. You're on television, you're writing, you're a spokesperson. What kind of drove you into it? Did you have that inclination early on?
Well, I appreciate the compliment, and we could always narrow those letters down just to spell out nutrition nerd, because that's pretty much all that it boils down to. But actually, I didn't realize that nutrition was an option for, you know, a profession until I got to the University of Southern Mississippi, and I took my first nutrition course and just became completely mesmerized by the idea that we can, for a large majority, control our health and wellness just by the foods that we choose to eat. And this is very empowering because, you know, health is a choice and healthcare starts at home. So I just fell in love with the fact that I had semi-control over how I felt, the energy that I had, you know, from anti-aging perspectives and all, just by the foods that we choose to eat. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And then, you know, with media, all of the information can be so contradictive and can be confusing, and which do you listen to? So I just felt that it was my duty as a nutrition expert and professional to just get out there and put out this most simple information, science-based and positive information about, you know, how to live and eat a healthier lifestyle.
Tell me, the CSSD designation, the Certified Specialist in Sports Dietetics, that's something I haven't heard of before. Is that new or?
Well, it is a certification. So it's a step up from being a registered dietitian. I'm specialized in sports, so I have thousands of hours of on-hand training as well as took an additional exam to make me qualified for those credentials. And sports have always been a part of my life. In high school and then in college, I always stayed active as an adult. I'm a marathon runner and endurance athlete, and I saw again that often nutrition is the missing link to improving performance, and wanted to learn more about how I could time and combine the nutrients that I choose or the foods that I chose to eat before, during, and after my workouts to improve my performance as well as other athletes. And it's a true passion of mine to help regular, everyday, non-elite athletes to help them run their best race, to also helping, you know, professional high school, collegiate athletes to make a few tweaks to their nutrition regime, like adding low-fat chocolate milk as their post-workout beverage, and then seeing the improvements in performance on the field as well as, you know, their health and wellness in general.
That's awesome. That's, you know, you were talking about the nutrition programs, and a lot of times I really struggle to know what nutrition is in the end. Something's good for you, then it's bad for you. So, you know, and I mean, we're just bombarded by media. So to actually be able to develop a nutrition plan specifically for someone, I mean, what a great gift you give to people.
You know, nutrition is not rocket science unless you're not a dietitian, right? And so to everybody, it can be very foreign. And really, when you sit down and just put it on paper and talk about it, it's usually surprising how simple it is to people, but then also it's so hard because they do have all the different media messages competing for their space at the grocery store and just mm-hmm. what a lot of opinions get turned into facts. And, you know, from a registered dietitian, we are a science-based profession. So we always look at science first, and sometimes the media doesn't always follow those same guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca, I'm looking at your profile picture on the website here, and you're holding a basket of vegetables and a little thing of chocolate milk in your basket. You know the picture I'm talking about?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well,
you're supposed to be listening to the interview, and you're looking at pictures of Rebecca over there.
I just want to say nutrition is definitely working for Rebecca. we ought to all be involved in whatever Rebecca's doing. We should be following.
Well, I appreciate that.
We ought to be following every step of your life. We ought to be doing. Look at Rebecca's picture. And I'm not only talking about how beautiful she is. I'm just talking about the fact you can tell how healthy she is.
Well, she is very healthy. Did you hear the part about marathon runner? I mean, that caught my attention for a little bit.
I was looking at the picture. And I didn't hear anything.
You didn't hear anything of that interview.
Anyway, Rebecca, what is it about, you know, you talk about confusing. Let's just jump into this thing that I, as a chef, Nothing is more important to me than milk and cream. And I don't want to hear nothing else about anything. Milk and cream. And I realize that there's all
kinds of... And butter.
Well, of course. I mean...
Well, I'm just saying.
What about, is it marketing? Is it imperative that some people do move over to some of these milk substitutes? And just there's so much happening out there with these substitutes gaining popularity for one reason or another. And I'm sure there must be some need in the marketplace as far, but what is it? I know how milk has been a part of our lives from the beginning of time. We all know the value of it, or should know the value of it, but yet we're bombarded with all of the things we, Michelle and I, were talking about in our opening, the soys and the almonds and all of these other kind of things.
Those are dirty words at Suda.
Well, I would like our listeners to know, number one, why the growth in that market, and is it as much a need, or is it just mainly marketing?
Well, from a culturally standpoint, I mean, you know, take 20 years ago, we all had milk with meals. Well, in the beverage department, we have just seen an increase in competitive beverages. That's one of the reasons. Another thing you hit on is that we should know, but not everybody knows the benefits that milk, cheese, and yogurt offer. They offer 9 essential nutrients needed for, you know, the calcium for our strong bones, a potassium for a healthy heart, as well for helping manage blood pressure, and then the quality protein found in every glass that helps preserve, maintain, and rebuild lean muscle mass. And sometimes we take for granted that people do know this, but people don't realize what a nutrient-rich beverage actual cow's milk can be. And see, this is what sits it apart from all of the other alternative dairy products that are on the shelf, is that you have those 9 essential nutrients not found in the other, but they're actually naturally suspended within the beverage. So some of the other choices, if you don't drink it all the way to the bottom or you don't shake it up because they've been added back in, you may miss out on some of those nutrients that you were hoping to get. Where with real cow's milk, you don't have to worry about that because they're naturally found in that product. They're going to be naturally suspended, and so no matter how much you drink, or if you don't drink all the way to the bottom, then you're going to make sure that you're still getting your nutrients of concern.
I was also at a meeting I was in just recently. There was the whole conversation about the lactose intolerant group. And being in the restaurant business, I can assure you, and you may be able to speak a little bit on this, I have been in the restaurant business for 32 years. I've run restaurants, around Louisiana, and I have never seen the amount of allergy issues that people have. You know, they're intolerant to this, they're intolerant to that. I half of my menu is about what people cannot eat. Is this because now we're just finding out and responding to things that that people are not able to eat? Is it just more part of the common fabric of today's society that everybody is allergic to something or cannot eat something? Now, not necessarily talking about lactose, because certainly that's a whole different issue, but we'll talk about that in a minute. What is it about this whole new, and I'm going to call it a movement more than anything else, because every night my restaurant in New Orleans, every other ticket has about 3 or 4 things somebody cannot consume, and I've never seen that before in my life. What's bringing that on?
You're absolutely correct. I mean, it seems to be, you know, bombarding everybody with these new food allergies or food intolerances. And, you know, the tricky part with a lot of that is there's usually a broad spectrum, whether it's a wheat intolerance, whether you're lactose intolerance, where you can't digest the sugar found in milk naturally, which can cause stomach issues. Wheat intolerance is sort of the same way, to whether it's a peanut allergy, or, you know, the list goes on and on. So you have in the population, you have from maybe you just get a little rumble in your tummy to a little gas, all the way up to, you know, anaphylactic shock when it comes to, you know, peanut allergies or other forms of food allergies. So it's really hard to say where the majority of people fall on that spectrum. A lot of it, too, you know, is the media that's hyping up a lot of the symptoms and then obviously linking it down to only one or two diagnoses. And the you will hear people tell you the best way to find out if you're allergic or, you know, have intolerances to something is completely remove it from your diet and then see if you feel better. Often people remove all of them at once from their diet. They go from the extreme, and then they start to feel better, and they have no idea which one it was that was causing, you know, the issue to begin with. So when they start to add things back in or start to revert back to a normal way of eating, because that's often what people do, they go to an extreme diet or way of going and then coming back, they'll start to have those symptoms again, and then it's just a vicious cycle until they can nail down maybe what's the really the one, you know, food that's doing it. But my personal opinion is that a lot of it is just found from these processed foods, from the different additives, or maybe even some of the, you know, artificial sweeteners that when eaten in excess can cause tummy issues too. So anytime you go back to a whole foods nutrient-rich diet, which is your lean meats, your grains, your low-fat dairy, your fresh fruits and vegetables, you're going to feel better regardless. So, you know, whether it's a true allergy or intolerance, I'm not necessarily sure that that's the case for everybody, because testing is extremely expensive and most people self-test. They don't actually medically
test. Right.
So, you know, you just, they sort of choose to live that lifestyle without actually knowing. But I would like to warn your listeners, too, though, from as a registered dietitian, anytime that you remove an entire food group without seeking, you know, medical attention or advice, such as all of your wheat products, because that includes a lot of your whole grain breads, pastas, as well as rice and, you know, grains, or if you completely remove dairy foods from your diet, you're risking great nutrient deficits or consequences from doing that.
Right.
And making sure that you're not getting those nutrients from those food groups back into your diet in other ways. So that would be my largest concern, whether it be a real allergy or a fad, is that a large majority of the population is removing entire food groups from their daily diets and not adding those nutrients back in different ways, and you could start to see them becoming, you know, malnourished.
That's really interesting, and mm-hmm. I think, that's a great take on it. I know that certain segments of our society have been just naturally lactose intolerant, and I was at a meeting we just recently sat in to learn there's about 30 million people, so to speak, or maybe a little more, that are lactose intolerant, and that's probably the thing that we heard about most in intolerance over the last few years. Tell us a little bit about that, and then I want to talk, I want to jump into some of the dairy farms as well and all of that. Lactose intolerant, tell us about that.
Okay. So lactose intolerance is when a person is unable to digest the lactose, which is the naturally occurring sugar found in milk. So basically your body just lacks the enzyme that breaks that apart. So in the digestion process, then it can lead to gas, or it can lead to bloating, or it can lead to other tummy issues. But this doesn't mean that you have to avoid dairy at all. There's lactose-free products that are actually available that are real cow's milk that just have the lactose removed, so the digestion is absolutely made simple. Now, what happens is oftentimes in African Americans, Asians, populations, they do tend to be more naturally lactose intolerant by genetic. Their whole families just won't drink any sort of dairy. You are really drastically increasing your children's chances for osteoporosis later in life, not getting the calcium that their kids need. Often people don't realize that our bones calcify by the age of 13 or 14. So really, osteoporosis is a childhood disease with adult consequences.
Wow.
So it's just about getting back and reeducating that you don't have to be afraid of milk. There are lactose-free products that won't cause any problems when you drink it, and that the value of the milk is worth putting it back on the table.
That's a great explanation of it, and I'm sure with all the sweet drinks and everything else, I'm sure it's even more difficult today to really have kids focus on their milk, and I want to talk a little bit about that when we get back. Can you stay on for a minute? We're going to take a quick little break and come back.
Absolutely,
and
then, my pleasure.
Hey, we appreciate it so much. Y'all don't go anywhere. When we come back, I also want to find out about the dairy industry. I love the farmers. I love the farm families, and we want to talk a little bit about where they are in this country today. So we'll be back in a minute. Please take me.
Hi, this is Cheryl Castillo. Join me each week on The Exchange for conversations with musicians, artists, dancers and writers, poets and actors, and everything else in between. Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 3 a.m., here on listener-supported public radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein Peter or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Soy Fernando Pérez Viar. Únanse a mi programa Espacio Latino este domingo a las 5 p.m. para que escuche buena música latina e información sobre la cultura latina aquí en el sur de Luisiana.
That's Espacio Latino, coming up this Sunday evening at 5 here on KRVS.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM. Lafayette, Lake Charles, online at krvs.org.
No milk today, my lover's gone away. The bottle stands forlorn, a symbol of the dawn. No milk today, it seems a common sight. But people passing by don't know the reason why. How could they know just what this message means?
You see, that's my kind of music from the 60s right
there. Well, I was just going to say, did you slide across the gym at the sock hop in your socks and get stuck to a girl's forehead to that song?
That's exactly right. Look, Matt, look, that was the 60s. We were going to the McCrae Music Festival back then. You know what I'm talking about?
Look,
oh, what are you talking about? Anyway, welcome back, everybody, to Starting It Up, the best tasting, and I should mention, cultural show on radio.
In so many ways.
Michelle, we have a great guest, Rebecca, and Rebecca is keeping milk alive for all of those young children out there
yes.
who thinks they should be sucking down those big red pops, you know?
I know. She's seriously doing a valuable community
service.
Doing a
great job, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca, we were talking about lactose, and one of the things that I learned recently is that some cheeses are naturally low lactose. Can you tell us about that? Because that was kind of a surprising thing to us.
Yeah, many people don't realize that sometimes the foods that they eat or the dairy foods that they eat won't cause their tummy issues if they are lactose intolerant. And they don't realize that it's because that they're choosing virtually a lactose-free product to begin with. So the darker the cheese, like your cheddars, are actually practically lactose-free. So the lighter the cheeses, like go down to like mozzarella, feta, those that, you know, are often used in the things that we eat the most, like pizzas or, mm-hmm. you know, those type of things, tend to have more lactose naturally. So those types of foods may, you know, make your tummy rumble if you do have lactose intolerance, where snacking on sharp cheddar cheese and, you know, some fruit or cracker, whole grain crackers probably wouldn't give you any trouble at all.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your question, the darker the cheese, the lower in lactose naturally.
And then I was also wondering about the value of whole milk versus skim milk versus fat-free. Do you get the same nutrients no matter which one you choose, or is whole
milk? You
know,
that's the great news about milk. When you're looking at the dairy case, when you choose cow's milk, no matter which one you choose, from whole to 2% skim, fat-free, or even if you choose lactose-free milk, you're getting the same 90 essential vitamins and minerals that make cow's milk so important. That calcium, again, for the bones, potassium, as well as the muscle-building protein. You're just reducing, removing, or limiting the fat content, which can fit into any lifestyle. So registered dietitians recommend that children below the age of 2 should continue to drink whole milk. The reason being is that their little brains and bodies are just growing at a rapid rate, and they need that extra fat. It's a healthy fat. It's a natural fat for their growth and development. If you have a weight concern, or maybe you are looking to reduce calories in your diet after the age of 2, then you could drop back to maybe the 2% or the 1%, or maybe even the skim milk once as an adult, So you're not missing out on the nutrients. You're just limiting the amount of dietary fat. But I always like to make the point that we recommend you get 3 8-ounce servings of milk a day, not 3 32-ounce cups, although the dairy industry would appreciate that, but only 3 8-ounce servings. You know, so if whole milk is the only way that you can get your family to enjoy milk, like my husband just loves his whole milk, then at the end of the day, the fat content really is not going to outweigh the benefits of the milk by letting them choose the milk that tastes the best to them.
Hmm. Rebecca, one last thing about the drink options out there. I know with all the sweet drinks, because I have nieces and nephews, and I see what they're carrying in their hands, etc., and all of these power things and all of these, I don't even know what they are, but I know many families find it hard or are creating an environment where the kids are not drinking milk. Your website has that great section called A New Look at School Milk. Tell us about that. How's that gone? And are we seeing any kind of upticks in milk consumption because of it? What's happening
there? I'm glad you asked, because what research knows is that kids will drink their milk if it's lightly flavored. Now, flavored milk usually gets a bad rap because it's got added sugar, but again, it's a lack of information on the parents' part to just understand exactly how much sugar is in that milk. So typically, your flavored milk found in schools or found in a grocery store only have 3 small teaspoons of added sugar to an 8-ounce serving, where a Coke or a sweetened beverage would have upwards to 12 to 13 teaspoons of sugar per serving with none of the nutritional value. Now, as a mom myself, if I know my kid is going to choose a beverage with their meal, I would much rather see them drink flavored milk, whether it be low-fat, chocolate or strawberry, and getting those 90 central nutrients and bypassing the sugar sweetened beverage until after they've gotten in their nutrient rich one.
And that's a great point.
And another thing to encourage parents is, you know, tell your kids to drink their milk first or serve milk first at the dinner table. Again, we're talking about 8 ounces. Let them get their 8-ounce glass of nutrition and then say, what other beverage would you like to finish out your meal? That way you're not removing the things that they, you know, enjoy or making it look like it's a, you know, a bad food, but you're getting in the nutrition first, and moms can feel good about protecting their bones and their growing bodies, even if they do want to indulge in a sweetened beverage every now and then.
You know, I grew up on a farm, and of course one of the things that was really special to me was that big crock bowl of milk that we used to have on our counter. We didn't put it in the refrigerator, if you can imagine that. It came out of the cow, went onto the counter in this big wide mouth bowl.
Yeah, but there were 8 of y'all.
That's what I say, but we drank milk. Milk was like our water. We didn't have cold drinks. So we didn't have anything. We drank milk. And of course, why do you think I'm so smart today? I've developed my brain.
And bones of steel, I bet you have.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But like rebar.
No, but it's true. I mean, yeah, we did have 8 kids, and Daddy made sure that big milk bowl stayed on the thing, and we would dip a cup in it and drink milk all day long like water. It was our beverage of choice because we had water or milk. That was it. And all the farm families were like that. And we shared milk from farm to farm, too. And of course, we made cottage cheese, and we made cream cheese and Creole cream cheese and ice creams. We churn ice creams.
And butter.
I mean, my God, it was just such it was such a natural thing for us to do. And the farm had such a high level of respect, and the farmer and the farm families had such a high level of respect. How's the dairy farmer doing, generally speaking, today? I know so many of them, and you hear all of the stories, but at the same time, the passion that these people have and the commitment that they have is just so incredible to me. What are you finding about the family dairy farm out there?
Well, I find that, you know, often people don't realize just how hard our dairy farmers work, right? They work 365 days a year. They're up with the chickens, and they go to bed at dusk, and they're really taking care of their land. And Louisiana dairy farmers are no different. I mean, they are just amazing, hardworking, generational-type farms. But, you know, it's hard time for any farmer out there with you know, the way feed prices are, as well as, you know, some of the drought issues that we have going on. But then, too, it's manual hard work. So it's hard to sometimes get back those next generations to come back and take it over. But I just feel like, you know, agriculture is, in general, is the heartbeat of America, and we won't ever let it die, that people are getting their roots back to where they come from and wanting more farm-to-table type options. And I think you'll start seeing our agriculture in Louisiana just keep sparking and growing, and abroad.
I think also there's been such an emphasis on the farm-to-table aspect and all of that, that there's the farmers' markets, et cetera, the dairy man being at the markets now. We're starting to see so much emphasis put on the importance of the farm family, and that's really a great, great thing, because my cheesemaker from Bulgaria, Demcho, and his wife Pepe, who came here from Bulgaria to run my dairy, where we brought in milk and did our cheese and yogurts, etc. I remember 7 days a week, this guy and his wife was so passionate about their work. They'd be here at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'd come by, they'd be here. Now, he had a saying every day, and I'd always smile when I heard. He said, "Sir, cows have no holiday." Cows
and
have
he's
no
absolutely holiday. Right. And no, and the dairy farmer has that, no holiday as well.
That's what he meant. His respect was, he had such a respect for the animal because it had no holiday, and the farm family had no holiday. Anyway, I want to say how much we personally love Sudie and the work that y'all do, and I've had the absolute pleasure to work with your group, and I am such an aficionado myself on everything milk. I grew up on a farm, and I understand the importance of not only the farm family, but also drinking milk and what it means to us. Please know how much I appreciate y'all great efforts. I'm always here for you, and it's a great pleasure to be talking about milk here in June and letting everybody remember that it is Dairy Month. And if nothing else, the nutrition, the value, the importance, I think everybody should remember the commitment of our farm families that's out there every day depending on us to support what they do. And milk is just right at the top of that totem pole. And Michelle, I see you have your hand.
Well, I just wanted to also say, in looking at your website, one of the things that Suda also promotes, you know, often we have food drives, but what food do you need more than milk? And so they have something set up online that you can give milk to families in need through generous donations.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, 1 in 5 Americans are food insecure, which means they just don't have enough to make ends meet each month to put nutritious foods. And milk is one of the top 5 foods that are most requested, but it's very often not received, a lot to do with the fact that it's a perishable product. But the National Dairy Council, as well as Feeding America, are joining forces, and they're trying to solve this problem. So even when families hit on hard times, they're not missing out on their nutrition. And anyone can feel free to go online at Feeding America, or there's links on our website, southeastdairy.org, and you can generously help donate a gallon of milk to a family in need.
And I want to point out that y'all will have Rebecca's information and the Southeast Dairy Association's information on our website as well, www.jfalls.com. And when you go to our Facebook page, Stirring It Up Radio, you can also find our little facts and figures side, our little portion where you can get all of the information. We'll load it all up there as well. So there's no reason that you shouldn't have all the access you need to find out anything you want to know about milk. And again, Rebecca, thank you so much for being with us. And remember, we are opening that restaurant September 15th. Over in Renaissance Colony Park.
Be nice to have a little.
They'd be there for that grand opening with a cheesy smile and a big old hug.
And guess what? Our refrigerators are full of milk.
That sounds fantastic. Well, I look forward to eating there for sure.
Well, you're a sweet lady, and hug the babe as far as, and we appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. It's an important message, and no one could possibly deliver it better than you. Thank you so much for being
with us. Well, I appreciate that. All the best to you, Chef Don.
Okay, great. Thanks. All right, everybody. That was great. Michelle, what about the subject? I see you have a milk book in front
of you. Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't tell everybody about how I used to milk cows.
Please, Michelle. Please.
I mean, we have photos.
Yeah.
Anyway, talking about books and building your culture and culinary library, I love these one-topic books. You know, it's kind of shocking when you see them on the shelves, a whole book dedicated to salt or a whole book dedicated to cod. Well, now we have a whole book dedicated to milk. And Well, I'm sure you do remember on our last trip to New York, slipping into Lexington Avenue bookstore, and there was the book on milk by Anne Mendelsohn. Great book. She's done extensive research on milk. She refers to milk as the first food, and she tells the story of the evolution of milk from ancient times to present day. She takes us through various products of milk, the cream, the cultured milk, yogurt, butter, cheese. Fantastic. She also includes some very interesting recipes from far off and exotic areas of the world, and she comically refers to it as Yogurtistan. So you'll have to take a look at that book, Milk. And the next book I want to suggest is for those who have an intolerance to milk or milk products. It's called The Milk Allergy Companion and Cookbook. This was written by Juventa Vizzani. For some, dairy is just not an option, as we've been discussing. The author lists 175 recipes for you to choose from that include everything from breakfast dishes to desserts, all without the use of anything dairy. So we'll have both of these books listed on our website, and great contributions to your library.
Good, good. Great, yeah, I love that book right there. Just beautiful cover, too, with that big white bottle. Anyway, Slama, I know the Facebook, facebook.com, Stirring, S-T-I-R-R-I-N. It up radio. Just go there and all our facts and figures are there.
Yeah, it's happening out there. We got some photos of the new restaurant coming together.
Yeah, and also the Melitone stuff. Yeah, and I do have pictures of the new restaurant. Y'all, creme caramel custard, they use a cup of sugar, a tablespoon of water, 4 eggs beaten, and then, of course, a little pinch of salt. But I love the cup of milk that goes into it and the 1.5 cups of heavy whipping cream. And then, of course, a little vanilla, nutmeg, cinnamon. My creme caramel custard, it's so easy to make. You're going to bake it at 300 degrees in the oven, and it's going to sit in that oven just until it firms up. And, of course, some people say it's going to take a little bit longer, about an hour or so to sit in there, an hour and a half. But then you want to take it out and put it in the refrigerator and let it really get ice cold. I tell you, I love a good creme caramel custard. We're also putting some recipes of some of my cream-based soups, like a cream and eggplant soup. But if you go to my website, jfalls.com, jfalls.com, every recipe in the world with milk is there for you. Michelle, it's been a good day around the cow. So we're going to see y'all back. Go drink a glass of milk. In fact, drink 3 of them, 8 ounces, and you'll do exactly what Rebecca said. And if you go to our website and see a picture, you want to do exactly what Rebecca says. Bye-bye.
Hip Life, Azonto, Gospel Music, Roots, Drumming, and Dancing. All part of the musical mix in 21st century Accra, Ghana. Hello, I'm Georges Collinet. Join me for a kaleidoscopic tour of contemporary music in Ghana. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we'll have the one and only Tony Joe White and rising folk artist Mark Edgar Stewart. We hope you'll join us. That's all next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
This week on Harpistry, music from some of the artists who will be participating in the 41st American Harp Society Conference in New Orleans at the end of June. Tune into Harpistry on Sunday at midnight and Monday at noon right here on KRVS.
KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Rendez-vous de Cajun en direct du Théâtre Liberté à Eunice est rendu possible par le Best Stop au Scott. Rendezvous de Cajun, live from the Liberty Theater in Eunice, is made possible by the Best Stop Supermarket in Scott.
Oh, okay. No, merci. Okay. Merci bien.